Just a few things before I take apologies for this meeting. We distributed based on our agenda that we'll deal with briefing by second progress in respect to the implementation of the general strategy. But I would want us also to look at the program for the oversight visit later today, once we've done it, so that we can deal with it. That's next week. Oversight hasn't been approved, so we have to get the team to start talking about the logistics and all that. So I thought, let me just alert members that we'll have that agenda item with us. On apologies, I did receive an apology for the DM. She's currently abroad on government business. I've received an apology from Honorable Fanel Merve, who's also an alternative member into the committee. I don't know if members any other apology that exists, but I see members are here. Others are normally the ones who not attend. I did not receive any apology from the minister. Nothing has been sent to me from the minister. Okay, I see the acting DG is here. Maybe I'll just get some clarity, because I thought the minister would be here to introduce the new board. I don't know if it's you as the acting DG, and all the best. I did receive communication from the minister indicating that you'll be acting. Mr. Tuache, honorable members, has been appointed as the acting DG in the department following the suspension of the DG, Ms. Sagesa. Maybe let me start there and just get clarity as to the whereabouts of the minister.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. I think let me apologize for the minister. I think he is also caught up in some urgent matter. I think it was due to actually come and introduce the board, but there is something which just arose last night and is attending to it. He said I should convey his apologies to the committee.
Yeah, in which I think let's do things properly. Communication to come through so that we are aware, because as a chair, I need to know before I take a seat that who's attending so that we do the planning. So who's introducing the board to the committee? It's yourself, DG.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would like also again to reiterate that it's something I think which just arose, I think, last night, and I would like again to apologize. I think the formal communication, I'm just talking to Zira to ensure that the formal communication is communicated to the board with respect to this matter. Well, in my delegated responsibility now, I think I would like also to take this opportunity to introduce the new members of the board of SACCO and to indicate that after a long process, I think finally we've got an authority which is going to be taking the affairs of the post office forward. You will recall that the post office has been under administration since the resignation of the last board, and we then did, as the department, call for nominations for people actually who would be in a position to come and serve as the patrons of the Southern Post Office, and also, I think critically, to take responsibility for implementation of the strategic turnaround plan in order for us actually to move forward. After some consideration, I think the members of the board who are here are the best South Africans who were thought to be capable of taking the board with a collective skills base. I think they're going to be talking and introducing themselves to backgrounds and where they are coming from, that will be in a position to ensure that the governance of the post office is in accordance with the best practices around governance, that the affairs of the post office are also conducted in a manner that which is in the public interest. I think the financial side of the post office has been of concern, and it is of concern to all South Africans, and I think it has been in the news, the post office, for its inability to discharge its responsibilities due to the financial crisis that shall be dealt. Amongst the members of this board are people actually who are very well versed in terms of managing financial affairs, who are experts actually in terms of those matters, and I think we are hoping that their intrusion into the South African post office environment will actually help us to confront the issues which are associated with it. We do also have other aspects of the turnaround which I think have been emphasized, like the need for the post office to move from the archaic structures which it had in the past to deal with the new modern communication technologies as it actually moves forward. So the IT environment also is one of those which were highlighted as critical and needing to be addressed. There is the other aspect also of the post office and its future, which leads then to the question of how does the post office integrate into the broadband deployment of which are taking place. Upfront, I think, every connect did indicate that it has been integrated, but again now, the post office has to possess the means and the ability then for it to integrate into the networks, which are the new modern IT networks. Amongst the people in the board also are people who are well-versed with respect to the IT systems that can be developed. I'm just giving the highlights of the members of the board and the skill bases which we have sought to induce into the post office, guided by the strategic turnaround plan and guided by the needs and the circumstances which the post office has today actually finds itself. I will now ask Dr. Simon to try and introduce the members of the board. I think first let me introduce him, at least known to the committee. He has served two terms as the administrator. The first term was attended, and then he actually then continued on the second term. Under his scholarship, he then was responsible for the development of the strategic turnaround plan, which was submitted to cabinet and approved sometime in June, which now we are implementing. I think the board will then also bring highlight the extent to which we have scored some achievements with respect to the changes which have been introduced as a result of the strategic turnaround. Can I ask then to each person, Dr. Simon, to actually then introduce the other members of the board. Thank you very much.
Okay, I think let's do it this way. Let Dr. Simo introduce himself and then allow our members, because we don't know them, we'd like to know them so that we can put the names to their faces.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Simo Lushaba, the former administrator of the post office, and I've now been appointed as the chairperson of the newly appointed board of the post office. Would you like us to say more about ourselves? I have no necessary thanks. I just want to apologize for one board member, Mr. Kampat. He's on his way driving from the airport, Jefferson. I think there were some flight problems when his flight. He's coming with our company or acting company secretary, and they should be coming through any moment now. I'll then pass to my colleague on my end, the deputy chair.
Hi, I'm Ole Rashford, the deputy chair of the post office.
Good morning. My name is Robert Ola, board member.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Monica Molisi, on the board.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Dawn Mahom, and I am on the board of the post office. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and the committee. My name is Noma Shubisi Mamane. I'm also an non-executive board member.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Ndu Zabe, board member.
Good morning, Chair and the members of the portfolio committee. My name is Sisi Ngubane. I'm a member of board member of the post office as well.
Good morning, Chair and the honorable members. My name is Elvis Rawale, also a non-executive member.
Thank you, Chair. We also have the acting CEO, who is very well known to the committee, and I'm not going to introduce him. He's going to do the presentation, Mr. Mlumatu. Thank you.
No, I just wanted the introduction first so that the members can know the board specifically, because we are interacting with the board for the first time. And before we can move to the agenda item, I need to flag to members of the board that we would be interacting as a committee. I think firstly, let's congratulate you on your appointment as board members, and to say that you have a mammoth task in your hands. There's quite a lot of work that needs to be done, and we expect it done excellently as the committee. We would hold you accountable as the committee without fear or favor. We do interrogate issues quite extensively. We normally don't agree to big delegations, so you'd have a representative team that comes to Parliament. So because today is your introduction, we expected the whole board. But going forward, we do not expect the whole board to be here. So we would work around how you manage your delegation. But I think it's important that we also say that while we are going to hold you accountable based on the South African Post Office Act, the functions of the board are very clear in what you need to do. And we would like to appeal that while you might have been new, if you can go back and look at some of our comments or request your company to give you some of the issues that we've been raising relating to post office. Specifically, so that we do not find the same mistakes being repeated. Where you find board meetings fit every month, but you do not see value for that. So, as a starting point, we would like you to go back, and our executive will assist you, and the company secretary will assist you. Just to look at issues, because your delegation will be expected to come next month when it deals with annual reports. You have taken over, you will account for the time even you were not yet here. Because the annual reports that we'll be dealing with is for the past financial year. So it's going to be important for the board to reflect on those annual reports prior to them being submitted, and also put in place how you're going to deal with the issues that have been raised previously. Because it is the Auditor General together with members of the committee. So you are already rolling members of the board. And from our side, you would know it is starting from today that we expect you to be already on the feet running, because we do not have the luxury, especially because of the conditions where post office is. There is no luxury for time, there is no luxury for still finding our feet. We believe that you've been appointed as members of the board because of your capability and your experience and your exposure to be able to assist us to turn around the post office. So that's what we are expecting as a portfolio committee. Honourable members, you would note that there's been a change in the presentation. I interacted with the leadership of SAPO. And the concerns, and I think this is what we are going to have to ask the institution to assist us with going forward. The concerns are post office is expected to compete with private sector on commercial side of the postal sector. Now, because the law says that they need to account to Parliament, they need to report to Parliament, and the question is, how do we balance protecting their competitive advantage and not exposing everything that weakens them to be able to compete outside, balancing it with accountability? Now, part of the reason why the presentation had to be amended is because some information that relates to competitive advantage that they need to utilize to be able to compete broadly. I know members have that, and that's why we didn't retract from members. But the concern and the appeal was that can you not share that information publicly while still finding a way of balancing between sharing of information, accountability, but as well not weakening post office, not to be able to have a competitive edge. Because if you know the documentation, for example, some of the things that initially they shared were where they are trying to find business. Now, if that such information is public knowledge, then they are weakened because somebody can counter and go out there and block and not assist the office to be able to turn around in such a way that they are able to. So we are saying we are going to have the presentation inside to let in the basis of us being able to hold them accountable. Especially noting members that we have a process of annual reports coming. Our interest here is to deal with the turnaround and how. I think as Dr. Lushaba would want to understand if the board has processed itself and applied itself within the turnaround strategy. Because previously our concern has always been that, and I think we appreciate that as a person who's been involved in the turnaround strategy, to ensure continuity and that we do not have the problem of turnaround over turnaround, because that is the history of post office. If you can go back to the records of since 2009, I think, we should have 6 or 5 turnaround strategies that were presented to Parliament. And that's why we're very skeptical as Parliament when a new turnaround strategy was presented. And hence, I'm saying to colleagues, you need to go back so that you pick up the history. There are things that we'll be impatient about because of our experience as Parliament with interacting with post office. So you need to fight yourself within the limits. The same thing with turnaround. There have been several turnaround strategies presented to Parliament. And that's why for us, you can see the tight monitoring of the implementation, because we do not want to see a new turnaround strategy being done, and we hope, while we understand the board has its own obligation, has the right to apply its mind, we hope that you do not go and start developing a new turnaround strategy. We hope that you find a way of implementing and applying yourself to what is already currently here and find better ways, because we need to find some way of clearing out and getting post office on its feet. So those are my opening remarks. Honourable members, I'm going to ask that you move straight to the presentation, receive the presentation, and to DJ, I don't know if, actually DJ, I don't know if you have some remarks you want to make or you want to allow the presentation to start.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think I would love to hear also the board's perspective on the issues which you have just raised. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, members, for the opportunity. I'll just briefly address the question that has been raised by the Chairperson. We have had an induction session and the first board meeting, which was really to try and get ourselves organized as a board. The members have had the opportunity to look at the committee structures and allocate committee responsibilities to the board. So one of the committees that we have actually created, although it's not fairly wholly new as a committee, is what we call an FDP and IT governance committee, which is really going to oversee the implementation of the FDP. Due to time, though, Honourable Chair, we've not had the opportunity for that committee to immerse itself in the FDP. It's quite a voluminous document, covers a lot of issues, and we did provide an introductory presentation to the board in the induction session in terms of what are the areas that the FDP covers. We gave them the thesis. calling it ambitious because it's that voluminous in terms of the LTP document. So, yes, they have high-level appreciation at this point in time. They also have an appreciation of where we are with the implementation, where we're struggling, where we're making headway, as we will present today. But on the 28th of September, the board spending quite an amount of time of that day just on the STP alone. That's the time we could find in everybody's calendar to actually sit with the committee that's going to oversee it. So it's a process, Honourable Chair, and I am confident that by the time we come back in October, the board will be fully immersed in the STP. But it's like drinking from a hose pipe at the moment. Thank you very much. I'm then going to ask our acting CEO, Mr. Matonzi, to take us through the presentation for the members to appreciate the progress that's been made on the STP. Thank you.
Okay. Chairperson, members of the committee, the board members of SAPO, DG, and various colleagues with us today, thank you very much for being with us here this morning. I will take you through the progress that we have made with regards to the implementation of the turnaround plan. And my colleague, Nikki Dewar, who is acting Chief Financial Officer, will also assist me, as will my colleague, Andrew Novogore, who will come through later on to share some of the developments with you. As a way of introduction, I'm just going to take you through some key points which really provide the gist of where we are with the turnaround plan. And the chairperson has already alluded to the fact that as much as there has been progress, there's also been challenges. And at a very high level, the board has been made very much aware of those, and quite obviously the board will then be given time to acclimatize themselves with the document itself and provide support where required to management in fast-tracking the turnaround plan, again given the situation where the post office is at right now. From a financial point of view, certainly recovery has been slower than we envisaged, particularly on the revenue side, where we are still not at a stage where our revenues are matching costs. However, it should also be borne in mind that this is a problem that started as far back as 2004, where the cost of the organization started growing at a much faster rate than the revenues. And consequently, with all the efforts and good intentions, it's a situation that will require even more effort and perhaps a little bit of time, despite us really being struggling with time, but it will require a little bit of time to put in certain cases, the right resources to bring that level of balance between the revenues as well as the costs. We will show the members as well that with regards to the LCP initiatives, we are making some progress, some solid progress in terms of cost containment within the organization. And this is very crucial for managers because, first and foremost, we wanted to make sure that we are able to control what we are supposed to be controlling. And in most instances, cost is very much within what managers can control. A lot of effort is going towards this. A lot of time has been spent looking into how we can make support much leaner and more cost efficient. That doesn't take away from the fact that a lot of time has also been spent pursuing the revenues, pursuing the top line growth. And this pursuit, of course, also requires us to look into how we bring in more exciting and more relevant products and services into the market. And most of these products and services, as it is clear in the STP, will actually be coming from the non-reserved area of our market, which means we are now facing more competition. We are now dealing at times with competitors that are more agile than us. which really pushes us and to the limits in terms of agility, in terms of having a cost base, so that we can go out in the market and be price competitive. So it's a completely new ball game for SAPO that are getting into. We have indicated in the FCP that we are looking at a new SAPO that is going to derive most of its growth from the unreserved space in the market. The point has already been made regarding the appointment of the board, and certainly myself and my colleagues truly appreciate the efforts that have been made by the department in this regard. And I've got no doubt that the administrator also appreciated having new, fresh colleagues who will share their responsibility with him as he moves over from being an administrator to becoming the chairperson of the board. We've been working very hard as well. The committee will remember that even before that crippling industrial action, SAPO was already struggling with the number of vacancies at management level, and particularly crucial positions were vacant at management level. We have really gone all out in terms of the recruitment, in terms of trying to capacitate the organization, because a properly capacitated organization is quite crucial in order for us to buy the SCP. There's no point in having an SCP if it doesn't have the right sort of leadership to drive it with the right competence levels and with the right skills mix. We've been very aggressive in the market to try and source the caliber that we need. And it has been not without challenges, of course. You are dealing with an organization whose profile in the market is not necessarily that positive. And that puts a number of challenges in terms of trying to find the right caliber of people. And at times when you do find the right caliber of people, the premium that they command due to the profile of the organization sometimes makes it prohibitive for us to actually bring them on board. But nonetheless, we'll provide more information in that respect in the next slide. We have indicated that our financials remain constrained, and this will be reflected in the backlog of payments that we still have. And of course, there has been a progress, but the backlog that we started off with was quite significant. And from the financials that are generated by operations, it's not a backlog that will be quickly eradicated, but the Chief Financial Officer is going to provide us with more perspective in that respect. Together with the competent team, when it comes to implementing a turnaround plan, whichever organization it is, together with the competent team, there is normally a need to recapitalize the organization. There is normally a need to fund a turnaround plan. We have been out in the markets as well, dealing with commercial banks, engaging with commercial banks. Progress has been slow, but there is progress. Nonetheless, we have had engagements in the last round about 2 weeks ago with commercial banks, and we've got other engagements planned for 2 weeks or for a week from now. And as much as progress has been slow, I would like to indicate that it is positive progress, nonetheless. And over and above our discussions with commercial banks, where we are looking for debt funding, also engagement with the shareholder. A number of proposals have been submitted with support from the DTBF in this respect, and there have been engagements with National Treasury as well. So those discussions are ongoing, and so far we are widely confident that something positive is going to come out of this discussion, because funding is absolutely crucial in enabling the turnaround plan going forward. The last point on this particular slide is absolutely crucial as well, as it relates to the stability of the organization and the work that we've been doing with various union leaders, and I'm going to cover that a bit more in two slides from now. The leadership, executive leadership, as I've indicated, a lot of work has gone into this, and I'm happy to report back to the committee that we will have the new company secretary starting on the 1st of October. Again, this is a position that the post office has been without for almost 18 months now. And since early last year, we've been operating with an acting company secretary, so finally we are now in a position to actually have a permanently employed and really full-time company secretary, not one who is also doing nothing else in addition to being a company secretary, considering the significance of this position and the role that this position will provide in supporting the new board. The chief operating officer, we were actually looking for an interim solution here just to provide support more to myself, but quite understandably, it's been very difficult to get people who will take this position on short-term basis. So we have decided to continue with the things as they are. We are in the market doing the final rounds of interviews for someone who's going to drive our commercial function. And this is absolutely crucial in the sense that previously, SAPO used to have business units, and each business unit had its own sales and marketing team. We have now pulled those sales and marketing teams together to form one commercial function that will go out into the market as one SAPO and really drive the aggressive growth of revenues. And the last indicator, that growth coming by and large from the unreserved space. So the individual that we are looking for here is somebody really who will almost be starting the new sales and marketing organization from scratch and going out into the market with a much different approach and a much different attitude that says we are a cohesive organization, we're going to provide services and products that talk to what customers need, not what we have been pushing into the market before. Strategy and sustainability, we are heavy results indicate that yesterday the bakery day that we had has accepted the offer, so we're joining us as well beginning of next month. The governance and compliance have made the offer, and the discussions regarding the offer are looking positive at the moment. We hope to have the answer by end of this week. The individual will be joining us, and when he will be joining us. We've just been here at four others that are absolutely crucial that we have now finalized in terms of appointments regarding the project management office for a number of initiatives, and the chair has been here to our organization as for the history of having the turnaround plans, but never really having those turnaround plans being put into implementation. So the project management office becomes absolutely crucial, therefore, in ensuring that all the initiatives are monitored and where we are lacking is brought to the attention of the various management levels, and of course, it is reported accordingly to the various oversight structures that you set for the turnaround plan. Information technology, one of the Achilles tendons for the post office for a number of years. We have worked very hard again to find a suitable candidate here who will have the understanding of the challenges that we have the pedigree in the market, be able to engage with the service providers and the suppliers that we deal with, and we are confident that the gentleman who has accepted this position will be able to live up to that expectation. Properties, the committee will also realize that we did not have much time to do the comprehensive work on the turnaround plan that we would have liked to do on the property side. And again, this is an area that's been without a leader for over 3 years. We have an individual now who has started with us in August, already on the early stages of developing clearly what will be our way going forward at a tactical level with regards to properties management, as well as at a strategic level, bearing in mind that we've got close to 1.3 billion rand worth properties in our portfolio, and that is by municipal valuation, not even market valuation. During the rough period, really, last year, actually from the beginning of last year, when it comes to family relations, one noticeable exception within SAPO was that we did not have an employee relations measure, despite all the challenges that we have. We have all the individual now. She started with us beginning of March, came with very good reputation and very good levels of respect from both the union leaders as well as the industry players where she has been before. And we are looking forward to having her manage a much more constructive dialogue between ourselves and the union leaders. She hit the road running, and most of the engagements that she has been driving so far have been really promising. So in a nutshell, members, this is how far we've gone really in the last 3 months to try and capacitate the organization. The administrator made a very wise decision that we know we've got a backlog in terms of vacancies, and we started working on this just before the overall turnaround plan was approved by Cabinet. And it has helped us because we have really been active in the market, and we've started to attract some high-caliber people, some of whom are interested in SAPO on the basis that there is obvious support from the state, and also there is a new turnaround plan that they are going to be working with. As I've indicated, a lot of work has gone towards driving stability in the organization. We've had minor incidents in January and one minor incident in August, both of which were resolved constructively in less than 12 hours in the two sites that were affected. But open up that a lot of work has gone towards having a clear communications and change management program. It's going to assist employees and colleagues as we go through the significant change that we are embarking on. This is not an organization that you have to change, so it does require an effort to provide the direction at management level, to provide the support at both management level as well as at general worker level. And we've got a team that's been tasked with that particular responsibility. We have also worked working with a number of interventions currently, just to again help managers lead this STP itself. We are coming from an era of significant inertia, where in some cases I think we actually even worked actively to make sure the turnaround plan doesn't see the light of the day. So just to give the managers and give the supervisors the level of confidence that this journey that we are undertaking with them, it actually can be taken, and it can be taken successfully, has required us to put in this particular team. It's a cross-functional team, and it's going to be supported by the council, which covers colleagues from regions, covers colleagues from the labor side, and it will be chaired by the group chief executive officer. So this is one area that we're trying to make sure everybody moves together as an organization. And of course, initially, it's going to require more effort. Sometimes initially, progress will be slow. As teams gel, but there is absolutely no doubt in my mind that we are now finally off our mark when it comes to the journey that we have undertaken. I've mentioned the number of initiatives that we are putting behind the stability that we have seen in recent months on employee relations. The National Binding Chamber is one such structure which was there, but it does not really function. A lot of work then is going into making sure that this is a vibrant structure that allows for open dialogue, that allows for procedural and constructive approach to issues. We have worked also with CMA in developing what we call the business workplace relations. That has led to us having a mechanism of how to engage as managers, how do we engage the labor. And I'm glad to report as well that the recognized unions have signed into this agreement, which really was a major milestone for us. And of course, this is supported by the number of consultative structures that go through all the way to regional level. Again, all these structures have been put in place not to create a bureaucracy, but to make sure that we open up channels of engagement, channels of interaction at various levels of the organization. I'm going to ask my colleague, Nick, just give you a brief snapshot on the financials with more focus on the quotas or supplier payment situations.
Thank you. This is the agent as we showed at the last portfolio committee meeting. With a significant amount of over 300 million in the over 120 day category. At the last meeting, we actually promised that with the funding that we've been able to achieve from a bank, we would pay 80% of the accounts payable portion of that. We exceeded that. We paid to almost 85% of the amount owing to suppliers in the accounts payable system. The amount they said, 150 million, was paid to critical suppliers during August. We paid an additional 57 million in September. The creditors' backlog is still relatively significant, so we still need funding to help us address that backlog, but we are engaging with commercial banks and also National Treasury in order to source funding for that. In terms of rentals, our rentals are now just 30 days on a 30-day term, so there have been no more branch closures. We're trying to avoid operational disruptions wherever possible. So the business has returned to a more stable footing based on the prioritization that we've used in order to make payments. So the cash is still tight.
Jeff, I'm going to take the pharmacy through really a very broad overview of where we are then with regards to the implementation of the turnaround plan. Now, the way we have structured this particular slide is to make sure that we don't lose sight of some of the quick wins that we identified even before the turnaround plan was approved. And really, this was a program that was driven quite aggressively by the then administrator to make sure that we don't have the situation worsening whilst we're preparing for the turnaround plan. And the graph indicates on the left-hand side that on the target that we had set ourselves for the period ending the 1st of July, we were sitting at 77% achievement of the initiatives that we had set. The achievements that are lacking are the achievements that are more on the IT side, where we wanted or we needed to invest in order for us to be able to see the benefits. So those initiatives have been lacking on the basis that we've not been able to secure funding to fund those to support those specific initiatives. And the same logic also applies to the turnaround plan initiatives themselves that we're due to have achieved by the 31st of July, where out of 183 million that we had targeted, we have delivered 105 million. This came on the basis of the cost containment and cost management initiatives. For sure, it is not 100%. It is not what we would like it to be. But from the experience that I've had in this organization, this is a significant milestone as it talks to an organization that realizes the need to tighten its belt. It talks to an organization that has realized that it needs to be more cost efficient as it is now going to be operating more and more in unreserved space as I've indicated. A lot of effort has gone behind this, and a lot of effort is still going through some of the initiatives that have required more time for us to conclude the conversations with some of our customers as well as with some of our suppliers. The lag that you see, therefore, which is why we have got a 57% success rate there, the lag that you see there is coming largely from two areas. It's the revenue initiatives where we have had to develop new products, and in that development we've not been able to fund the development of those new products. Two, the same initiative that we had planned to have completed by now, which is the right size initiative. And again, the right size initiative in its own requires some funding. As much as it has got a very, very good payback period, which is within 8 months, nonetheless, there has to be upfront cash outflows before that can be realized. All in all, the picture that we are presenting to the committee therefore is that yes, the gap is there, but I think we can take some comfort from the fact that this is an organization that has been known to be shy when it's kind of reluctant to really push the envelope in driving turnaround plans. And this turnaround has been a very good attempt to that. And really the areas that have lagged behind that I've indicated are the areas that require us to have some cash outflows first before we can realize the benefits. And those have been struggling. This graph again indicates both quick wins as well as the turnaround plans. That the blue line shows what we have achieved versus the projected trend line, which is the green one. It is not too far off. And there is every confidence in us that with the availability of funding to fund those initiatives, we will be able to close the gap. And at the current rate, we should be able to get close to exceeding that trend line, of course, depending on when the funding becomes available for us to implement those initiatives. So, all in all, and the next slide is going to indicate where the challenges are. All in all, we are off the mark. All in all, despite limited resources, despite us not having all the management positions filled, we've been able to get off the mark, we've been able to put some benefits on the table. Most importantly, through the cost management, through the efficiencies that have been driving, and also through the realization, just that change in attitude, that is, we have to make it happen ourselves. Nobody else is going to be coming to our rescue here. The next slide then just indicates really the key screens and how they have performed in this far. It's easy to realize, therefore, that the commercial side has not been as successful for a number of reasons, which include funding that is required for that, which includes the fact that we did not have enough people to actually implement some of these initiatives. As I've indicated, we are busy in the market recruiting and appointing the commercial team at the moment. For the mail operations, and if perhaps we can look at the mail operations together with the transport and logistics, a lot of work has gone into how we rationalize the routes, how we can save on transport, bear in mind that the transport cost is the second biggest cost component in the organization after the employment cost. So really the work was to, how do we make sure that we don't have vehicles that are underutilized? How do we make sure that we don't have routes that are uncomfortable in service? And during this process, we found a number of routes for some of our customers that were actually costing us more money than they were bringing money into the organization, and appropriate decisions had to be made in that respect. The property element of it, we now have the leader of that stream on board. We had some of the delays in contract negotiations with some of our tenants. During the month of August, though, a number of significant moves have taken place. During the next update, we'll be able to raise the portfolio committee there with absolute numbers in terms of how much have we saved in the consolidation of properties, where we have now moved away from selling operating sites and we've put operations together. We have renegotiated some of the lease that we currently have, if they have not expired as yet. And really, we are now beginning to see some traction in that particular space as well. The supply chain management, this is again an area where historically we have not been known, if I can use the word, to be focused and aggressive. The engagements that we have had with some of the long-term suppliers that we work with has actually led us to realize some of the benefits, whether it be in the areas where we have had contracts or other licenses that we were holding, paying for, yet we are not utilizing, to areas that we've had to negotiate for the right levels of stock that we bring to the organization rather than buying too much when the usage rate is very low. So it's a wide range of issues that we have worked on with regards to supply chain management, and the progress has been positive so far. The human capital benefits that we see there have really come from the people exiting the organization through natural attrition, through retirements and resignations, etc. It is not linked to the right sizing that was part of the SEP. So consequently, there are some of those positions that are giving us that benefit at the moment. We have to be filled as we capacitate the organization accordingly. Not all of them, but some crucial ones we have to be filled. So in a nutshell, then, that shows where we are. With regards to the financial targets that we had communicated and that we had set for ourselves as well, that we are feeling overall with the 57% success rate, again, being held back by the revenue areas where we have not been able to get good enough traction as we envisaged, as well as the targets that we have set ourselves on the properties, which have been held back by the discussions that we've been having with the tenants and the landlords, of course. And some of those have indicated actually started showing traction during the month of August. The SME was also based as part of its key pillars, the business that support needs to be doing with the state. And Andrew is going to take us briefly on some of the engagements and some of the developments that have taken place with regards to government business.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson, members of the committee. As some of you will be aware, at Sunday in February of 2015, the Cabinet and the Court, a decision was taken that in order to support the turnaround of the South African Post Office, there is need that government participates by ensuring that at least 30% of government business is directed towards the South African Post Office. Together with this was the understanding that the deserved portion of the market, that is the 0 to 1 kg, inclusive of 1 kg, which is legislatively delegated to the South African Post Office, must be properly harnessed, especially within the government circles themselves. So we undertook two meeting government departments to explain both these concepts, that is the reserved area and the 30%. To date, we've met 21 government departments, and we've had some positive feedback from quite a few of them. The gist of our intervention was to explain to them the products and services that the South African Post Office is able to offer them, and further to then propose to them that we would like there to have some resource or resources available to them for a certain time frame, to understand the full scope of their business and therefore to what extent some can assist them further. To that end, we've had extremely positive results in terms of departments like the DOJ, for example, where we are working very closely with them. A lot of them are looking at mail room management, but with DOJ we're going a little bit further. We're looking at things, innovating things like travel house management. We're looking at perhaps dealing with maintenance payments and those sort of things on their behalf. We're looking even at a process of what we can call electronic filing as a course. And this is very much in the nascent stages, so it is a work in development, but we're happy that SABO is working with them at the at development stage so that we'll be ready to participate. But we must indicate that clearly there was some apprehension on behalf of the departments in the sense that the reputation of SABO unfortunately preceded us in these meetings, and we had to do a great deal of work to convince them that with the STP it will be a significant change. And to that end, one of the key things that we have agreed with the departments is that we are all fully aware that the traffic in terms of documentation between departments, between Pretoria and Cape Town, is quite significant. So what we have done is to put together a pipeline for government departments to be able to securely move documents back and forth between Pretoria and Cape Town as part of that confidence building measure, if you would like, on the part of government. So as indicated by the CEO, when we come through in October, we will have significantly more results to show because we are at a stage now where we are investigating within the departments themselves the full scope of the businesses that they carry out and to what extent the South and Post Office can then assist them in carrying out that business. But we are very confident. We've had incredible interactions with the departments, and we are confident that, in fact, if we do reach this target of 30% with government departments, it will go a long way to dealing with the top-line challenges that we are facing revenue-wise as far as the South Coast Office is concerned. Next slide, please. In respect to the regulation, the previous DG had put together a task team, and the intention here was that between the South African Post Office, the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services, and ICASA, we would constructively look through what might be impediments that are currently facing the South African Post Office regulatory-wise, that we would try and unravel and allow the South African Post Office to have a little bit more room to compete. As the CEO has already indicated, the intention is that this would allow us to compete very effectively within the non-reserved area. The task team was under the leadership of the DDG at the DDPS, and we will have to really look at that and see who will continue to lead that task team. But at the very beginning, it had three essential tasks that we needed to look at. It needed to look at how we could assist or how best the ICASA can be capacitated to try and improve on the enforcement of the reserve area. This has always been a challenge, and we needed to establish how this could be improved on. Secondly, we needed to establish how we could rationalize the retail rollout of the postal network to get an understanding of what are the needs of the communities and therefore roll out the retail outlet on the basis of a needs analysis and therefore ensure that as SABO does roll out outlets, it does not do so firstly haphazardly, but does not do so to its own detriment in terms of operational costs of those outlets. Thirdly, it was to review the practice of applying a price cap to the tariffs. And I'm glad to say that in the discussions with ICASA, ICASA was amenable to doing away with price cap to allow SABO some room to benefit from the full tariff when the tariff is actually given to the organization. So in that sense, we've made some progress. We will continue to meet as a task team because change of regulation clearly requires some time. It will require that the council, ICASA's council, that is, approves some of the initiatives that we'll have undertaken. Together with that, we have taken the opportunity of laying some complaints at the CCC on the basis of where we are of the view that there are competitors who are playing in a space that is reserved for the South African Post Office. And the essence here is that we would like to test the business models of some of these organizations and to what extent they might in fact be contravening the legislation as it is today. We are hopeful that the outcome of the CCC will give some guidance as we go forward, not only to ourselves, but also to the market and the competitors in the market in respect of what is allowed and what is not permitted by legislation currently. We're also looking very strongly at what is it exactly that comprises USO. This has been a thorny issue policy-wise, but we are getting to a position where we can properly delineate what exactly is USO, what is universal access, and more specifically, what is the funding model that is required to sustain this USO. And I'm glad to say both at the level of ICASA and at the level of the National ICT Policy Review that was being undertaken, there have been significant steps in trying to clearly articulate what we mean by USO, and in particular, what possible funding models might be employed to ensure that SAPO is not in fact bearing itself, so to speak, financially, in carrying out a USO that is not properly funded. Members will appreciate that in the old dispensation, the indication at the time was that the reserved area would be the funding model. The proceeds of the reserved area would be the funding model that would sustain post office for rolling out outlets. But it has been patently clear for some time now that that area is no longer sufficiently generating revenue to allow for that kind of funding to continue. Therefore, there has to be a rethink of how, in fact, we fund the universal service obligation. So we are chewing all of these avenues, and as I say, hopefully at the next meeting with the portfolio committee, there will be a lot more tangible results we can put to you as to what has been agreed and what has been cast aside before, etc. And follow-up meetings will be continuing in the course of September. Thank you very much.
The current period then really brings us and requires us to have significant focus on the supply, as I will explain. And earlier last week we had a workshop that was a two-day workshop focusing solely on the revenue initiatives, particularly as we are now building up towards the festive period where a number of our customers will be communicating with their clients either in terms of their credits or promotional material in preparation for the festive season. So this is the major focus area for us right now, and really it's an important one in us closing that gap that I indicated at the beginning between the revenue and the cost line. So there's a lot of effort that's gone towards managing the cost line. Really, the key focus now needs to be on growing that top line. The engagement with most customers, most of our key accounts are positive. Nevertheless, there's still a bit of apprehension from some of our customers in terms of our stability. Are we going to go through festive season without any strike, et cetera, et cetera? And it is understandable given what they had to go through last year. And with regards to the STP side, the discussions, as we have indicated, on the funding become absolutely crucial in order for us to have funds to enable some of the initiatives that are dependent on funding. And as we have indicated, engagements with banks that are ongoing, as well as the engagement with the National Treasury, with support from the department. The appointments are progressing relatively well now. Really pleased and sometimes I'm surprised at how much we have had to do with very little leadership at the executive level. We have had to stretch a few individuals beyond limits. We've got a number of managers that at times have had to hold more than two positions, actually. As a matter of fact, up to 3% at one point in time, up to 40% of our senior managers were holding more than one role at any given point in time, which is really stressful sometimes to them. But I think the result indicates that through their efforts, they may not be adequate if you look into the numbers, but through their efforts, the journey has begun. And so far, the journey requires the addition, therefore, of the other executives funding in order for the journey to pick up pace without losing momentum.
The commercial structure, as I've indicated, is very crucial for us. This is an area where we have never been strong or never been good at. We've brought in a number of individuals from outside to supplement the existing teams. We are bringing in fresh thinking, and all of them that we have brought across actually come from competitive markets, so they will be very well suited and well skilled for the markets that we are now going to be participating in. Andrew has already touched on the work that we do with government departments and the number of departments that we are really trying to make sure that by November we've got things flowing smoothly with them so that we can start realizing the revenues from the particular area as well. Ongoing discussions with labor, always crucial. I think yesterday we had another team meeting with organized labor. The same is happening today as well as tomorrow. To keep them on board and also to deal with whatever concerns they may have as employees before those concerns have become too big or explode. And ultimately, really, as I've indicated before, going into the market, repairing the relationships that we have with some key customers, which we still do, and getting to offer some of the products through cross-selling. As I said, moving from an era where mail business only go to the customer and talk about mail products and not sell the parcels offering that we have or the electronic solutions that we have. That is the forecast now going forward. Just finalize the marketing plan that we're going to be driving for the period until the end of the festive season, and that marketing program then will be able to support the same initiatives that we have developed. In conclusion, Chair, we believe we've overcome the initial and rough indicators. We believe the journey has truly begun, and it has begun actually with limited resources, both from a human capital point of view as well as financial. But it has begun. It has been a lot of efforts to push, but pushing we have done. And I'd like to believe that with the continued capacitation of the organization and also funding becoming more available, we are going to see the pace picking up accordingly during the course of the next few months. The cost management has been really good, and I think it really sets up very well. It's cost-effective. It sets up very well to be competitive in the market as well and not pass unnecessary pricing to customers or unnecessary pricing adjustments to customers. The customer focus through the commercial team is indicated. A lot of work will be required in terms of training there. A lot of work will be required in terms of going all the way down to the brand level on our channels, how they handle everybody who is coming through as a customer and not an annoyance as it happens here and there. And that doesn't take away from some of the great work that some of our channels do, and some of them have done that under really trying circumstances. And I would really like to appreciate those that have gone all the way on behalf of the organization. The discussions with the banks and the shareholders are ongoing, certainly with the pressure point that we have, as the acting CFO indicated, we wish those discussions could be concluded as soon as possible, because as managers, we do invest a lot of time in trying to manage the movement of cash to creditors as well as the collections from customers. And sometimes, given that we are now a lean organization, it does take away time from us, time that we should be using to actually drive the implementation of the turnaround plan. So the funding discussions are absolutely crucial. Engagement with employees is one area where we dropped the ball historically. We're working very hard on that. We're going to continue working very hard on that. And so far, I'm happy to report as well that the support from the three recognized unions have been great. And also, we've had engagements with the two registered unions that are not necessarily recognized, but they are registered. So those engagements are ongoing, and as I've indicated through the various structures that we have put in place, we've been able to see relative stability. We believe that stability is going to allow us there to fast track the implementation of the turnaround plan. That brings us to the end of the presentation, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. We'll take questions, comments, colleagues, responding to the presentation. Honorable Mackenzie, Honorable Killian, Honorable Suela, Honorable Shin, Honorable Maseko. In that order.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and welcome Dr. Shaba and the rest of the board. Just an opening comment in my EPC budget speech. An amazing foresight, because I saw you coming as chairperson of the board, and in fact I said at the time that I thought this was a hospital pass. So I'm delighted to see that you have a medical doctor on board, on your board as well, to assist you should you need it. Just if I can begin with the makeup of the board. I see you have certainly the board is very well qualified, certainly in terms of financial services experience. And we have a couple of CAs, we've got some great IT experience, but I see very little in the way of retail experience, in the way of courier logistics experience, in the way of any expertise, with one exception, in the way of any expertise in the postal services sector. So this indicates to me that there's more of an emphasis on the post bank, which is the elephant in the room in this discussion at the moment. An emphasis on the post bank and financial services rather than the shadow. And so getting the numbers right, but without actually looking at the overall operations of the business. So I'd be interested in hearing a comment on that. The exception of the CEO of Synergy Brand Solutions, I know your company exceptionally well, and your reputation is excellent, but I think you're going to have your work cut out to manage the shadow's reputation, because you know you can spin it. But really the only way to improve that reputation is actually to deliver the mail. So I wish you well in your task. It seems to me in terms of... Chairperson, with your indulgence. COO, in terms of slide 6, I just need a bit of clarity on the 180 million owed to creditors at the end of July. The 130 million that was paid, does that now come off that 480 million? So are we left with 330 million paying to creditors outstanding, or where's the 150 million subsequent to that? So what I'm trying to get at is an overall financial picture of the post office going forward. Because if the post office is losing, and I'm not a chartered accountant, so I'd appreciate the guidance here. I'm a humanities guy myself. And my maths is limited, but just being the numbers, if the post office is losing 100 million rand a month, and the post office owes 480 million to its creditors, and yet raises 1.1 billion in over, I mean 1.2 billion in overdraft funding, it tells you that by Christmas time, Ms. Matonzi, you're not going to have any more money. So. No, please, if you can guide me and tell you how you plan to make the post office financially sustainable so that come Christmas time, you can deliver Christmas cards for the people of South Africa. In terms of slide 11 and the contraventions of the SAPA monopoly and complaints related with ICASA, we had a presentation a couple of weeks ago by ICASA that revealed that they couldn't monitor, and they haven't been able to do so for a couple of years, they couldn't monitor the South African Post Office's adherence to service delivery targets because they didn't have the monitoring mechanisms in place. So you have a monopoly and a license given to you through the Post Office Act and through ICASA, but your obligations in terms of that monopoly and in terms of service delivery are never measured. So you have this blank check. And then when you don't deliver for months because of the strike, because you haven't put fuel in your vehicles, because the vehicles were taken back by Avis, because you haven't been able to deliver, and municipalities that, as we know, are at the forefront of service delivery, and in order to deliver those services, they must have money in the bank. Municipalities that then look for an alternative way of getting their rate bills to their customers, you then investigate ways in which you can punish them and penalize them for doing the job that you have not been doing in terms of your monopoly. I find that outrageous. It is hypocritical in the extreme that you victimize the victims of your inability to deliver. So your comments on that, please, and I would urge you that you step back from that process. Because if you can't deliver, then people who can should. How
I think I should have gone back to my motto of limiting certain questions.
But you can check this, and so you can't do these things.
Let's save use what we have out of the bus, yeah.
There will be. I've just got a couple more chambers. It also seems to me that in terms of cutting your costs, you say, CEO Tonsi, that your revenues are not matching your costs since 2012. And your answer is cut costs as the revenues aren't increasing. Now that's like a snake eating its tail, because the more you cut your costs, the less you're able to deliver service, and the more revenue you lose. So eventually you're just going to end up in this spiral where you simply don't have an organization anymore. The objective clearly might be to maximize your revenues. Now I understand that some of the costs that have been cut include things like maintenance, cleaning services, air conditioning, telephone that weren't paid. These all look great on paper, but they certainly don't do anything for your staff morale or your ability to service your business. In terms of your route optimization, and I've got just two more, Jefferson. In terms of your route optimization, loss-making routes, we've had reports of rural post offices where they refused to accept mail because they said to the customers, nobody comes to collect it and you might as well not bother. So in terms of your universal service obligation, how and your monopoly that's based on that, how do you balance that off, that route optimization? What routes are you looking at, these loss-making routes, and how do you balance that against your USO? And in terms of, last question, Chairperson, in terms of clawing back, I'll come for a second bite if there's an opportunity. In terms of clawing back lost revenues, how much revenue have you lost over the last 10 months, Dr. Sharpe, since you've been at the helm? How much of that revenue is recoverable? How much is lost forever? Because we know that a great chunk of that revenue is gone forever. You are never going to get that back. And besides your backdoor subsidy of 30% of government business forced to use SAPA, is there anything else you're doing to make up for that lost revenue? Thank you, Jeffers.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Secretary Persis. First of all, I also want to add my voice to congratulate the new board and to wish them everything of best. I do believe that collectively they have all what it will take to turn the bus around. We just want to make sure that they stay and hang in there and push the organisation to really achieve success going forward. Secondly, I wanted to just ask a few questions to understand your presentation better. If you could perhaps say the reference was made to the festive season, and if we see this in the bigger context of steps to make sure that you turn the reputational damage of the organisation around this time around. Your logo, we deliver, whatever it takes, must really work. Now, what have you done with regards to possibly looking at the staff complement that you would need? Do you have figures that you work on in trying to project the figures for this festive season, this coming festive season? And you have referred to some of the positions that would have to be filled, natural attrition, etc., and some of those positions. Are there any key positions that have you lost experts in specific areas which could have an impact on your planning for the festive season? Then, Chairperson, I would like to know, since we have a new board, we have a new board chairperson, we have a new structure, I was wondering if it was not time to rebrand to make sure that we, in fact, create excitement amongst the workers. Honourable McKenzie has referred to staff morale. Do you have any idea? Have you already conducted sort of any discussions with the staff, with the unions, and with everybody to make sure that they are all on board? Also understanding that it will be to their own benefit to ensure that the post office is turning the corner. Jim, now I would like to go to specific slides, if you will allow me. First of all, your new organogram or structure, macrostructure, is it much possible for us to just have that as a sort of just a schematic sketch of exactly what it looks like and how it is going to work, and to what extent how it's changing to also give effect to your new approach to the modern South African Post Office, if you could do that. Not today, I mean in time to come. Okay, then, do I understand you correctly? I'm looking forward to the next presentation from Sabu when we're dealing with the performance report next term, next term. Can I just ask you, if we look at your slide 6 and your slide 7, and if you compare 7 to 8, if you look at 8, it seems that the STP target is running very closely with actually achieved. It's running very close. However, if you look back on page 7, there's a huge gap. Now, it is understandable what was explained. Fact is the overall achievement 57% on the year, or is that 57% of where you should have been for the first quarter? If you could just give us a very clear understanding of that. Then, ourselves with that. Yes, I just wanted to say I'm very happy about slide 11, where you have indicated that you want to, in fact, look at the funding of the Universal Service Obligation. For so many years, that has been a very serious concern, that annually that must increase with additional costs, and is it an affordable model for South Africa? Have you conducted any research on that, that when you engage, that you would in fact be able to also provide facts and figures of where you have very specific requirements from the customers, because it is a customer-focused organization going forward, and also where we need to have an additional footprint and where we can actually collapse some of the force of presence. For instance, in urban areas, you have public transport, also you have private transport. Sometimes it's not necessary to have within 1.5 kilometers or 3 kilometers from each other. Is that really necessary? Because that is also very expensive. So are you going to look at that? And then, because essentially, what it is boiling down, if you don't look at what it costs, is it boils down to an unfunded mandate. You're giving a responsibility. There's no, you must make the money up from your commercial side. So if you could give us your opinion on that. Chairperson, I just wanted to have confirmation with regards to what is really very welcome is your new structures that you've created to engage with your employees. I think that was a very serious problem in the past, and that in fact escalated out of control. So regular interaction, especially such a huge operation. So what is the staff morale, if Honourable McKenzie talks about it now, can you tell us, has that improved engagement with staff so that they know what is expected of them and what they can do to make sure that everybody has success in this turnaround exercise? Thank you.
Honourable Zwelle.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Let me join the others also in welcoming the appointment of the board and so the other appointments with regard to the other vacancies that existed in the post office. And I believe this is a step in the right direction and that the board has been carefully chosen to steer the ship out of the stormy waters. But equally important, Chairperson, I just want to address myself on slide 7. Two quick things from me. The presenter spoke of cost reduction or cost containment measures.
I just want to find out how effective are those and what impact does that have on the provision of postal services? And secondly, the right sizing initiatives of the have not yet started. How likely is that process going to start? Thank you, Chairperson. How soon?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to know if the post office has a credit rating, and if so, what is it from which agency? Because I think that the cost of raising capital that you need to get the turnaround strategy operational is quite considerable, and one would think that the banks wouldn't be lending you money if they weren't going to protect themselves from the risk. Then I'm wondering, you talked when we met in May, I think it was, that you're going to have to reduce your staff headcount by about 5,000. You say that so far you've reduced it by 1,600 odd, and that's through natural attrition and things like that. Does that 1,500 come out as 5,000, or was that going to happen anyway? And what steps are being taken to actively drive down the headcount? Also, I want to know if you've had any demands or requests from your potential funders to pursue the reduction in headcount, and whether you've had any assurances from your employees and the trade unions that they will not indulge in industrial action until the turnaround strategy is completed, but then that may never be. Then, going on to the right-sizing initiatives, can you explain what these are and why they haven't started? And I see that missing from this is the projected income from the distribution of the set-top boxes and the costs of that. Is this because you don't see it happening, or because you're too afraid of the risks of that? Because it seems like quite a scary logistical plan. And then I'm wondering if there is actually a cost that you can share with us on what the turnaround strategy is going to cost. I'm not talking about the money that you're asking from the banks to refund you as such. What I'm talking about the right-sizing initiatives, the marketing campaigns to get people to trust you again. There are many initiatives that you're saying you need extra infrastructure support. There's an awful lot of money here that's going to be needed in addition to the money that you're trying to raise just to get you on an equal financial footing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would also like to join my colleagues in congratulating the new board and to say yours is a tall order. The Lord is expected from yourself, and that you have an enormous task, and especially in ensuring that the turnaround strategy is a living document. I think I'm of the same view as the Chairperson, that we probably don't expect you a turnaround strategy because you've just received the turnaround strategy, and some of you were part of the making of that previous, the current turnaround strategy. And I, on slide 4, just before this, and I wanted to say, Chair, that the new board, probably you need to familiarize, as I said, that there's a lot expected from yourself, to familiarize yourselves also with the distribution setup, if you could go and familiarize, so that when you implement, you know exactly what the situation is like. Get first-time experience and not just depend on paper, on what is reported to yourself, but you should have a personal understanding of what the situation is like, so that then you can make informed decisions and implementation. On slide number 4, I just wanted to know of the COO, okay, why is it supposed to be a short-term position for the COO? And secondly, on the other offers that have been accepted, and I heard the employee relation is a hair, but is it possible to know who these warm bodies are that are part of that? I think also it's encouraging to know that the unions have signed in relation to labor issues, and I just wanted to find out whether it's a year-on-year agreement or it goes over a certain number of years, whether it's a two-year agreement or a three-year agreement. Slide 6, I think I've been covered by my colleagues, but I just wanted to find out, because you know when you pay creditors, sometimes, usually, you find that you target those big companies to pay first, and the small business, those small ones, they suffer. So I just want to find out the situation with yourselves, that what is the terms, and what is the situation in relation to small businesses, because they usually get killed by such. I think on slide 7 I've been covered by Honorable Suella. On slide 8, I think Honorable Gillian has spoken about it, but coupling it with slide 7, I just want to raise an issue of sometimes you tend to, you know, just to impress sometimes or want to push yourself harder to have targets or bite more than you can chew. And you find that you cannot meet those targets. So the targets against the benefit, there's no alignment or the achievement. So I think also as a matter of cautioning, is that it will be important your targets should be achievable. So that then you don't have a lot of not achieved and partially achieved when it's your own targets that you set. And if you set targets, you're supposed to achieve them. And lastly, that you are in competitive space and the community, as I said, looks upon you for affordable rates. So I think it will be important for you to really pull up your socks and ensure that you restore the trust and the hope that the ordinary person used to have in the post office, ensuring that the Christmas cards are received. My grandfather used to tell me when I asked him if he had a meal for us, he said, "What about the 1 rand that girls always keep you?" Tell you, and I thought, if I saved those 1 rand at the post office, I would have had a lot of money by now. So people still have that hope. Not only people in the rural areas, even urban areas, have the hope that and believe that the post office would be better than an ordinary commercial bank. I think I'm done, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, members. I think let me start with on the presentation and go first to capacity. The first area of capacity, and I think that it shows some stability, because if you are to have stability within the institution, and appreciating that the board is there now, stability negative to be able to deliver on its mandate. It's very important. I think one of myself, the resident chief operating officer is now there looking for a shortage, because the chief operating officer is currently a group CEO. And it's important for the board to maybe give an indication of progress with regards to the matter of the group CEO and the CFO. Where is the matter? Have you reflected? Because this is matter, if you are to stabilize the institution, closure on this matter is quite important. Slide 5. Just to check, acting group CEO, the issue of the National Budgeting Chamber. Just to verify, because you pardon us, because previously, where, for example, you find that post office establishing an employment equity forum, for example, never utilizes it, go and does agreement individually with unions, and that causes conflict, and that causes paralysis. I just want to know in terms of this, has it started working? and all units that are recognized participating? And if so, how many meetings so far have you had to show that it is working? I think one of Mackenzie asked around the issue of creditors and all that, because we get quite a number of them asking us to assist with ensuring that they get paid. Now, I'm just hoping that you remember what you presented when you did your first quarter performance. And I'm looking at your presentation then and what is here in front of me in terms of slide 7. At that time when you presented, you gave us figures in terms of big wins. And maybe just to reflect, and you have to clarify, because I see the difference in terms of the amounts. At that time when you presented to the first quarter, you gave us that you are looking at SP initiatives was around the issue of the quick wins. Today you are saying it's 109 million, or 100.9 million for the period ended in 2015, which means that you have achieved 27%. At that time, when you presented to us, you were sitting at a percentage of 50%, but the figure then was 108.7 million. So for me, there's a discrepancy there. Which figure are we using? So that when we do assessment, we are able to know which one are we using. Because if previously you said to us it's 108.7 million, with achievement of 53.9 million giving you 50%. Now, today you are saying you have realized cost reduction of 27.9 million, which is 77%, achieved against a target of 100.9 million. But just to clarify, because there is that discrepancy in terms of the fee. Similarly, again, when you go to, I think it's an issue that is consistent, and maybe you'd have to come back to it. The issue of commercial side. I see here on slide 9, you have written partially achieved. But if you look at your target of 35.5 and actuals are 0.5, it can be partially achieved. Because if you talk about partially achieved, at least you should be sitting at 50%. Then it's partially achieved. You're not sitting out of 35.5%. You're not even hitting 1% of that 35.5. So for me, that's not what I thought would constitute partially achieved. I mean, unless if you are to explain to us what are your basis of determining something to be partially achieved, at what percentage? Because if you look at the previous presentation, you were sitting, again, which is what I'm also querying. You gave the report of commercial stream performed at 5%, and then you were saying it was due to lack of funding to enable revenue opportunities as customer reluctance. Now, with this one, you're sitting at 0.5. Which one is it? Because for me, that's another discrepancy. You can't, in July, having had, I think, when was the presentation done? 4th of August. That's when the presentation was done. When we dealt with quarter performance, first quarter performance. And this is maybe now you only accounting for one quarter, because my expectation with this one would be having to have checked through in terms of that, so that we are able to deal with that properly. Similar, because you reported on all this. This is a slide that dealt with the STP. That's why I'm literally going into it in detail, because when you presented, we wanted to know how far are you with that. And then there were things that at that time you were saying to us you would have had to be done, for example, the process of borrowing. At that time your target was that, okay, you would have needed, okay, no. Right. The 30th of June that you requested the approval and all that. Now, maybe teach you what I need from you is that to give beyond just setting up, because here you've got a team that is sitting, looking at regulations, what level of support is the department giving to SAPO? What is it that the department is doing to assist the entity? And in terms of the process towards medium-term budget review, is SAPO within the submissions of the department? What are processes there? Because if SAPO is to request adjustments or anything from Treasury, it can only be done through the department. So there's a need for us to understand what is it that the department is doing, how is it engaging, where are we in terms of that process. But more importantly, beyond setting up a team to look at regulations. And I'm saying this because in May, when the presentation was done to the committee, the DG, Mr. Gesser, said to us that there's going to be a monitoring and evaluation team. Are performing something that was, and I asked why I'm duplicating government activities, because there's already a team, already a department that is looking at monitoring and evaluation, and there was a justification to say the department needs to be involved. What is the report of that team? Because it was set up to evaluate progress of monitoring of the implementation, because we can get from SAPO, this other report is about them. But from the department itself, what is the evaluation? Where do you see the process? And how far have you been involved? What is the level of involvement? What is it that you have done in actual fact, in actual activities to assist SAPO from moving where it is? And maybe let me start with you, DG, in responding before we can give others to respond.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think in May, the department indicated that there was quite a close monitoring of what the South African Post Office was doing and the implementation of the program has been a great tool. Then the department and the Post Office have been working together with the Treasury also, trying to address the financial crisis at the Post Office. And I think a lot of activity and a lot of energy has been directed at helping the Post Office. I think we've got structures which are assisting the Post Office with respect to this. I'm going to allow the DDG, who's participating directly in all of the structures virtually, to give us a report as to how far we are now in relation to supporting the Post Office to secure additional funding in the form of supported service result from the Treasury. I think, Chairperson, I think I would like to also share the conviction which we have now that to utilize commercial loans to deliver essentially what is a public service is not the best way of undertaking the rescue of the Post Office. In as much as it has been forced on us due to the circumstances and the financial pressure of the Treasury with respect to the discuss, something which now we're engaging with the Treasury around in order to ensure that actually we've got public resources in order for us to deliver on a public market. Now the Post Office also is indicating that even if it has to be doing more in the future, it has to actually go into an operational commercial mode in order for it actually to do that. Now we need then to balance again the commercial imperatives vis-a-vis the public imperatives. This is something again in the long term which is I think we need to continuously have to actually then evaluate and to say what is the most appropriate funding mechanism which is there for the Post Office. Now in the policy discussions, and I think a white paper has been published before the end of this year, this issue again is going to feature as to what are the best funding models which are there. There is work which is being done with respect to the universal service model of the Post Office, how to fund the universal service model. I think the department is actively working with respect to that. Now, I think we spoke also just briefly about the question of the role of the Post Bank and the finalization of that process, because again, the health of the Post Office going forward is tied also to a functioning and a very, very dynamic postal bank, which is actually linked to the Post Office, which is part of the mix in terms of the revenues which the Post Office is going to be having in the future. But I think I would like the DDG, Magopi, now to talk specifically with respect to the structures which we have in terms of both monitoring and supporting couple in the execution of the TP.
Thank you, Acting DG, the Chairperson and the members. We, as a department, we've been actively involved with assisting SAPO since last year when the financial difficulties started showing up. And going back then, we can talk about how we have been working with the Treasury and SAPO to actually get a government guarantee. The money that we're talking about right now, which is the 1.2 billion that we're borrowing from the market, is the money that is being borrowed against a guarantee that was given by the National Treasury. And so that's one of the things that we've been involved in. We also assisted the South African Post Office to negotiate with the National Treasury to give another guarantee, which was now aimed at supporting the South African Post Office to get an overdraft, to increase its overdraft from 50 million to about 350 million with the Standard Bank, which is the money that South African Post Office has been using up to now to run some of its operations in the circumstances where Post Office is unable to generate enough operational revenues to meet its operational funding needs. We have continued to work with the South African Post Office when they were at this, in particular, the team that was set up, in fact, starting with the appointment of the administrator and during the process of the development of the strategic turnaround plan. We had several engagements where we've been reviewing several proposals that were put across before the actual final turnaround plan was finally developed. We've assisted in the appointment of the board, the current board of the South African Post Office, which is being welcomed today. As members may be aware, the process involves a number of steps, starting with actually putting out a call for an invitation to the public to nominate people who are going to go through, who may be considered for appointment to the board. And so we were in charge of that process as a department, of which finally the board was appointed, and we have it here with us today. We have worked with the South African Post Office on the question of the MDF. The South African Post Office recently submitted an MDF request for funds to the tune of slightly more than 580 million. And that is a process, a very interactive process, where we had to interrogate the numbers, the funding requirements, and everything around actually finally coming to the number that the South African Post Office needs from the MTF. In the main, the request is about the question of the how to funding for upgrading of the 306 post offices in underserved areas, plus also funding for some other post offices to assist some other post offices to the what in the STD is called the STD calls the rebalancing of the post offices. So mainly those are the two components of the MTF funding that we have requested from the fiscus. We've also been helping the South African Post Offices to put together a request for funding through the second window of funding, of government funding, which is the adjustment estimate process. In the process, we've put together a funding request of about 1.1 billion. And later we have increased that. We are in engagement currently with the National Treasury to look at whether that can be increased in light of an observation and from the review of the report of South African Post Office, that South African Post Office might need more than 1.1 billion to actually implement the turnaround plan. We have worked with the South African Post Office when Mr. Nongoko was presenting. He alluded to meeting with government departments, 21 government departments. And we have been at the forefront of opening up the doors for the South African Post Office actually to engage with those departments. They have been finding it difficult to actually even establish contact with the government departments. And we have even reached a point where we actually said, well, we think having conducted about 21 government departments and having started engaging, now we need to move to a next step where we look at consolidation. Government at national level has got about 37 government departments. But we have taken a decision to say, it is not very useful for us to rush to round up all government departments without us being able to see exactly now what comes out of the engagements we've had. So now we are at a stage of consolidating. As Mr. Nongoko was saying, initially we were explaining all this, the capabilities of South African Post Office. We were explaining to them the decision of cabinet quota to represent 30% of government business and related issues. Now we are getting to the next stage of now consolidating to then say, in respect of a specific department, what exactly is it that we are selling to them? So that we don't come with a one size fits all. We are able to have tailored and specific offerings that go to departments in accordance with their functions. So that is the thing that we've gone into now. We have been, I've spoken to the process of appointing the board. We, even before this current round of engagements now with ICASA, we had initiated, and there has been an ongoing engagement with ICASA around the question of how can we reduce the burden of universal service obligations that are placed upon the South African Post Office. And even before we see the results of this, there have been results. There has been an agreement prior to this round of negotiations, which is led by the DG, which resulted in ICASA agreeing that this year they're going to reduce the target of addresses to 500,000, which resulted in an agreement that this year we will not have a target on further expand building of new outlets. And also as part of, this is the kind of work that's coming from the past. In the current year, the South African Post Office has been allocated about 55 million from the fiscus to assist the post offices that are having difficulties. And we are looking at assessing as to how that 55 million is being applied in order to help the post offices that are not able to generate enough revenues to match their costs. We have participated and have assisted in the IMC that is chaired by the Deputy President, and we presented several reports. In relation to maybe as the last issue that I want to talk to, the issue of monitoring. We, as a result of all the agreements and discussions that we've been having, we have, together with the National Treasury, agreed to establish a monitoring team that is going to specifically monitor how the South African Post Office adheres to some of the conditions that underpin these agreements that we've made and guarantees that have been given. These guarantees, for instance, that have been given to the South African Post Office have got a lot of conditions. And one of the biggest conditions is to develop the strategic turnaround plan and to implement our strategic turnaround plan. We've been involved in the development of the strategic turnaround plan, in reviewing the strategic turnaround plan, in looking at whether we are, as the South African Post Office, ready to actually implement the turnaround plan. We were doing that conscious and aware of what the chairperson alluded to earlier on. But the South African Post Office in the past has been developing strategies, but where the problem has been is to implement these strategies. And so conscious of that fact, we have been closely evaluating the strategic turnaround plan. I think I'm going to end there, and I will respond if there are any other questions or clarifications. Thank you.
Over to Tisha Pokhara.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start with the few that I am able to answer. There was a question from Honorable Mackenzie on the retail courier logistics postal services in the board. Just to point out that I think there are about four members that have experienced and expertise in that area, being Mr. Nguna, sitting behind here, who has experienced. Mr. Rauhale actually spent 10 years running mail centers. Ms. Mamane has a lot of marketing and retail experience, and maybe you also forgot about myself because I've been around for quite some time now, but I do have a logistics experience, having run the container division and logistics services for Transnet for over 7 years. So I just wanted to highlight that, and it's a board of nine, so it's a delicate balancing act, but I think there is expectations to rely on in that regard, so I wanted to give you that comfort. Chairperson, you also touched on the, I think you correctly pointed out that the COO was going to be temporary because the current COO in the position is acting as CEO, and they were stretching him, particularly with the implementation of the FTP. So we wanted to get somebody to focus on the operations, because the nature of this transition that we are going to be undertaking as the post office is you can't drop the ball in terms of what you have and have been doing, because it is a base for on which you launch the future. But you also have to have enough time to look at the change and the change management processes. So that is basically what we're trying to address. And then, Chancellor, you asked regarding the progress with respect to Group CEO and CFO, and where are we? We are continuing with the disciplinary processes in the case of the two incumbents, with the CEO having made quite a lot of progress, but it's quite a strenuous process. We, however, should point out that as of the past week, have been negotiating a settlement arrangement with the CEO in particular, although we've been asked for something similar by both incumbents, but the CEO is much more closer to the principal position that we've taken in terms of we only pay what is required by stitches, and we are not going to pay anything more for segments in that regard. Firstly, Sapo can afford it, and secondly, in principle, we think it's a wrong way of addressing disciplinary issues. I am hoping that in the next few hours, we are going to receive a settlement agreement that we both agree to. So in terms of the discussions, we have gone that far. And that will enable...
Let's put you on that one. You're saying it's settlement agreement, it's not a handshake, that number.
No, there's a point of making. What
a
handshake.
Yeah, so that there's no, we want you to be clear, because I know you are allergic to
okay. Yeah.
So first settlement.
Yes, no, we've agreed that there's not going to be any handshakes, golden or silver or platinum.
payable in the separation. So that's basically where we are, and I would like that we actually have signed a settlement agreement and concluded that. Unfortunately, as I speak at this moment, I have not received that, although in principle it's been agreed to. So that's basically where we are. The point I wanted to make is that it's an important step because it then enables us to progress with the recruitment of those leaders, because even as we sit now, we still have acting chief executive officer, and it's quite a daunting task to be carrying in that particular situation. So we are trying very hard, and God has actually been very active and very pronounced in leadership stability and then trying to install that since appointment. So that's what we are actually getting to. We're also doing everything we can in the part of the CFO hearing to conclude the hearing and to progress that. Lou will then address with the management team some of the questions.
I've been asked to deal with creditors and the funding issues. In answer to your question, Honourable McKenzie, in terms of the payments that have been made, they have come off the outstanding balance. So the balances owing to suppliers at July 31 in total was 952 million. They have been reduced by the payment made in August of about 205 million. However, bear in mind that because of the monthly cash flow shortfall that we have, that creditors balance will increase a little bit, not as much as in the past because of our cost-cutting exercises, but will increase a little bit above the net effect of the July balance if the payments made in August. In terms of the funding and what our colleagues at the TPS referred to in terms of the applications that we've made, for consideration for an increased adjustment budget request. These are all linked to specific initiatives that are included in the FTP, and this will answer the question that Honourable Killian had in terms of what is the total cost of implementing the FTP. There are several initiatives, quite a lot of them are in the IT space, and there's a very detailed schedule that we could actually share with the members rather than my going through it in a lot of detail. So that you can see, but in terms of IT infrastructure refresh, for instance, we need to invest in a disaster recovery system for the whole of SAHO. That's business continuity risk we need to address. There's the mobile virtual network operator capability we need to install. We need to look at the new mailing business for an online shopping mall, outsourcing of post-bank and SAHO IT to reduce costs. And also looking at the network design or redesign and implementation, and this ties into the SA Connect initiative in terms of connecting branches and communities using post offices. So the total for that IT infrastructure refresh is 514 million. That's a substantial amount that will deliver a substantial benefit of at least 1.5 billion. So it's positive from a cost-benefit perspective. We also need to invest in our track and trace system, upgrade the equipment that we use to scan the items in the mail centers and branches, and this will also support the secure delivery of mail throughout the country. Another initiative we need to invest in is upgrading of the PIN pad in the branches, which are basically the card reading machines. We are not EMV or Europay MasterCard Visa compliant yet, and we need to be to reduce the emergency fees that SAHO pays to banks for accepting those transactions, as well as for the post-bank corporatization exercise. And that would involve some CapEx spent. But again, the net benefit is positive. We need to look at upgrading the point of sale system. Not all of the branches have been converted yet. We need to sort that out. We need to make sure that the equipment that the branches have is capable of running the business, that there's adequate backup in the branches, that there's a network server where you can store the files so that you don't lose data when a machine crashes. So it's basic protection, revenue protection, and business continuity investments that are needed there. We have also requested funding to assist with upgrading of certain properties.
some branches, some IT data centers. We have a data center at Seven Church. It is not compliant enough to run a bank system, so we need some investments there. We've included the MTEF request that Mr. Mahopi referred to in this total. So there's network rebalancing cost where we will reposition branches. There's obviously a site restoration making sure that we introduce more mobile branches and we introduce kiosks. So we have a different type of point of presence instead of a brick and mortar build it ourselves approach. We've been a little more responsive to what the market is actually doing in the retail space. In terms of further investment, we rely a lot on rented vehicles from Avis and other suppliers to do a last point delivery and also national line haul contracts for the delivery between major centres. We would like to invest in our own fleet capacity to be able to do that and make sure that we have the right mix of vehicles and trailers and all of the supporting equipment that we need to deliver mail, parcels, and whatever else we need to deliver, furniture, whatever else we can help government with in a more effective manner. We need to invest in the e-business infrastructure. There's a lot of initiatives in terms of, instead of delivering physical mail from one major center to another, taking the electronic files from customers and printing it and delivering it at that point of destination to reduce costs as well. Also reduce costs for the customer. So we're looking at that as well. We need to invest in some e-commerce initiatives. We need to look at docking the secure delivery of items between the legal firms. We're looking at introducing an e-facility there as well, an electronic facility. We need to invest a little more in the trust center, which handles the confidential digital certificates. Then we can actually grow that business more, including signature applications, electronic signatures, and related services. And then the final one in terms of cost optimization is we need funding to implement the workforce right-sizing. We haven't been able to start that process because the funding has not been secured yet. And you only have a 60-day time period to actually start it and finish that in terms of the labour. So funding is the prerequisite. So the total that we would require is CapEx of over a three-year period. It's CapEx of 2.6 billion and OPEX of 800 million, bringing the total to 3.4 billion. That is the request that's gone to Treasury. We are hopeful that we at least get part of that, but the way we've submitted the request is by initiative, so they'll be able to decide we'll be able to fund these initiatives and not those. And I think it's a more transparent process than just asking for a lump sum.
Chair, one thing I wanted to just add to what Nicola is saying is, because it talks to the question that Honorable Mackenzie also raised, timing is very important in terms of these investments. For instance, Nicola has indicated with right sizing that you've got 15 days to finish it. It's at a cost of 370 million. It saves 60 million a month in cash outflows. So you have to see, I mean, the 100 million that Honorable Mackenzie was referring to in terms of the gap, the earlier we do the investment in the change process, the earlier we receive the benefits. So we could come through the first year season flying in terms of our cash situation, or we could come out struggling if the investment aren't made earlier. And my view is we're now getting into a critical path in as far as that is concerned. I just wanted to emphasize that because sometimes I get a sense that we treat cash as static. Unfortunately, the deficits and liabilities grow exponentially if nothing is done. And the benefits take even longer to be received if nothing is done. So the area we deal with it, and it's actually about funding and moving on and getting in a state where we now implement it better. we can't do half and the other half then keeps up with that. Up to now, we've been trying our level best to hold the cost back. And I think in the first quarter, we saved about 218 million rands in costs, but revenues were 285 million rands below the budget. So we need to invest in this investment. One, to increase or enhance revenue and to take a step down in costs. And that 2 months alone of implementing the right sizing is an additional 120 million in our costs, because we still have to pay those resources, even though the pay survey doesn't change, whether you implement it today or you implement it 2 months down the line or whenever. And that's where the difficulty really lies. So I just wanted to emphasize that the timing issue is very important on this particular element. Thanks.
Thank you. Sir, some of the questions that were raised by McKinley have been addressed. We've spoken at length regarding the issue of the crisis, and certainly operationally the plans that we have put in place are geared towards us ensuring that Christmas cards are delivered and are delivered on time. We have been very cautious in deciding which cost lines are we reducing. It is not an easy discussion if you are faced with the circumstances that you are facing. And we have done some of the discussions between myself and operations managers, like Mr. Nogoko has been at times animated and at times quite aggressive, in that we are trying our level best to find the right balance between reducing costs and ensuring that we are not disrupting the services. And particularly the services in rural areas. Most of the initiatives that talk to route optimization, for example, that they're focusing more on ensuring that we've got the right size of truck for the right size routes, instead of having large trucks yet being 40%, 50% utilized. So the focus has really been on the efficiencies. How can we have an efficient organization? What processes can we put in place to improve the productivity rather than to jeopardize the delivery of services? The issue of the monitoring by ICASA, which was briefly addressed earlier on, well, it's a couple of smaller municipalities that, according to our information, were actually not affected by the industrial action per se. So the decision by those municipalities to deliver mail themselves is not as a result of the post office not delivering to those municipalities. Most of the municipalities that were actually affected by the media industrial action last year, we deal with them pretty well. They've raised their concerns. Some of the metros have called us in for meetings, and we've been able to prove that most of the operations are back to normality in those particular areas. And some of the municipalities that you're referring to actually have been delivering the mail themselves way before we had the major industrial action last year. So it's a historical matter that for some reason has not been going away until the decision was taken that we now need to approach the council formally to put that particular concern across to the CCC. The lost revenues, we would like to, because some of the revenue that we'll be referring to, Chair, we'll be talking to customers that we service together with other players in the market. We'd like to provide the numbers of the revenues that we have lost in writing. And in that written submission, we're also going to indicate what are the plans, therefore, towards the festive season from the revenue generation point of view, and how do we intend supporting those revenue initiatives through the marketing plans. I would like to provide that to the committee in writing, please. And this will address then questions that were also raised by Honourable Killian. Yes, the complements
that we, if I could just raise a particular point, I know it was raised by Honorable Sheen. The numbers that indeed we have lost, the 1,600, will talk into the 5,065. However, not in its entirety, in the sense that there are areas we would like to replace the left colleagues. And the areas that have been affected the most with regards to the resignations and the exits, IT has been severely affected. It's certainly an area that, as you can imagine, is very attractive to other recruitment agencies and other companies. And in most cases, employees that we had there were people who had joined us in recent times, and because of instability that went through, they felt that their careers were being compromised. The other area that has been a challenge for us in terms of skills departure has been finance, severely affected, and that came through quite clearly during the audit as well by the Auditor General, that the skills base that we have now in finance has reached dangerously low levels. Both vendors also not dispersed of the departure of critical skills. We've lost some really good experts in Postbank who indicated that there's very slow progress from the point of view towards the granting of the license and clarity of the future of the bank as far as their professionals in the banking industry is concerned. So those three key areas we will have to find ways of bringing new skills back into those areas. So the 1,700, therefore, is not going to be a blank slate that all those positions will be lost. The rebranding to create excitement, I have to admit that it's an area that we have not applied our minds to. We realize the importance of it. It's been all about survival so far. With the skills that we have lost, with the team management team that we have had, it has all been about survival. And at times, on a few days, barely surviving to wake up in the morning. But it's crucial that we do move the organization to a stage where there will be more vibrancy and a more positive outlook as well to the future of the organization. We will provide the schematic structure of the organization, which will indicate how we have moved in terms of the number of ethical members, for example, to the fewer executives that we're going to have, and that has also continued with the general manager and senior manager positions where we have reduced, but also going to bring to the portfolio committee, based on the benchmark information that we have, how SAPO actually remunerates its employees versus other state-owned companies. Just to give a flavor of some of the issues, management issues that going forward we will need to address to ensure that there is equitable remuneration and more importantly we are able to bring into the organization the right skills and the right competence levels. The issue with regards to funding has in a way been addressed, so, but we still have a long way to go here to get a full understanding and appreciation of what exactly is it going to cost the post office to fund the USO if it's going to continue operating under the license conditions as they stand. Because it does come at a price. And there are certain things that will need to be looked at differently. Because the USO funding is there to service a product that is actually declining. So how do you find the right balance between ensuring that you still provide the services to all the households, all the citizens at the same time that is done in a financially viable manner? The numbers that we presented, the 57%, actually spoke to the where we are supposed to be at the end of July. So indicates therefore that we are marginally above the halfway point. That's where we're supposed to be at the end of July. However, Jay, the point that you're raising, we have realized that as much as the numbers that we report on LTP are audited by our internal auditors, I think based on the discussions that we have had and the feedback that we are receiving, we sometimes present them more for our benefits than to the benefit of the committee. We would request that we be given an opportunity to provide more clarity on these numbers, especially as we have initiatives that actually feature
in both the quick win as well as the turnaround plans, so that those initiatives are not double counted. It's clear that if it's reported here, this is how it's trending, and if it's reported on the turnaround plan, this is how it's trending. We'll provide this information to, within the next 7 days. The question on the demand from funders, we don't have any demand, specific demand from funders that we need to reduce headcount. However, the commercial banks are very, very clear. They want to see progress on the implementation of the turnaround plan. The discussions that we had with them 2 weeks ago are very clear on that, and I've got no doubt that in 2 weeks' time when we meet with them again, they're going to emphasize the need for traction and momentum in the implementation of the turnaround plan. The question on the income from the set boxes, it's very much part of our turnaround plan, and we have been very involved, and we've worked very well with the Department of Communications in the respect. We have we set up various structures, the weekly structures with USASA, we were with the department and the minister last week, Thursday as well, to provide update in that respect. There are so many dependencies though, that we did not put in the income for the period of April to July. We did not expect that it come here because we knew that there were a number of decisions that needed to be made on the set-top boxes rollout. And most of those decisions really were not in the hands of the post office. But we have proved to the department our level of readiness. We have proved that we are ready for the rollout of the program in SK area. We have proved that we are ready for the rollout in the borderline areas as well. We are in arrangements with the USASA, as I've said, the Department of Communications, and frankly, from our clients, the sooner it rolls out, the better, because it will talk to the positive cash income for the post office. The information that we have has been provided to the National Treasury as well in terms of what is the projected income from the distribution of the turnaround, of the FTBs, and also what is the expected cost. What are the fixed costs that are associated with distribution? What are the variable costs that are associated with the distribution model that we have developed? The question from Honorable Mazeo regarding the position, I think it has been addressed. When it comes to the payment, given the constraints that we have on cash flow, we look into two main categories. We look into ensuring that we are in good hands, or we make good with suppliers that are directly responsible for the generation of revenue and the delivery of service, because those two are interlinked. If we shoot ourselves down in service delivery, it's going to impact on our revenue. So we prioritize those, and also we prioritize the small businesses. Every time we do, in fact, we're looking to the numbers for this month as well in terms of how do we prioritize the payment on the basis of cash that is coming through to the business now. Those are the two categories of suppliers that we look to first. Sometimes it will mean that there will be suppliers that are specialists, legal representatives, etc., that get moved towards the back end of the queue. But suppliers that talk to us delivering the service and raising revenues, suppliers that we prioritize, as well as the small, medium enterprises who we know, some of which are solely dependent on the post office for their existence and their survival. We will take the point on ensuring that the targets that we set are achievable, and at times, of course, there would have been a bit of exuberance from our side in our quest to get the post office out of the situation that it faces. However, we've got targets that they've committed to. So our conversation as management has been that if there is a particular initiative that is realized now is not going to deliver the targets at the right time, then we need to come up with something else to make sure that we don't compromise the target nonetheless. We take the point that there are some commercial slides we should have read there rather than partial achieved. The partial achievement really does talk to some of the key milestones that we have achieved internally
where we have been able to develop the e-solutions, for an example, and the e-solutions have required us now to make the partner with whom we've developed that solution. But some of these initiatives, they may look red or they may look pink. Really, a lot of work has been done in terms of the key milestones, and perhaps we're too inwardly focused there and looked into how much work we have done. And whereas if you look in terms of the actual number delivered, it still remains red. We do take note of it. I believe we've covered as much as we could, Chair, unless there are areas we've left out.
There was an issue around the structure. Just to confirm if the structure hasn't changed. Because I remember the structure was presented to Parliament. Honourable and asked about the structure of SAPO. When the, I'm trying to remember the date, I just saw it. But at that time you reported that you moved from 15 group executives to 7.
Yes, we can confirm that is the structure that's been
approved. That has been discussed. Let me just flag that one. Okay.
May I maybe, Chair, suggest that on the table that shows partially achieved, not achieved, maybe with the information that the CEO is going to provide in the next 7 days, we also provide the detail of exactly what has happened with the partial achieved, so that instead of just showing the status, we actually show what are those milestones and what has been done, because as indicated, there's a number of particular revenue initiatives, things that have been developed and concluded, which we need to pay for them so that we can use them. And I would request that we're able to demonstrate that. Chair, before we finish...
Just on the finances, Dr. Sam, I think what is important is to reflect, because remember some of the issues are projections. For example, not only on that one, even on the overall fund, you see, initially we were talking about 125 billion is now 1.25 billion now, the figures between what is submitted at the corporate plan when it was submitted and now it's changed. What would assist us as the committee is when, if there's a movement, because it could have been projection, but we project that would need so much of a bailout or so much of a guarantee. Because I'm picking up the fact the figures are changing. What would assist for us to be able to do a proper oversight? To give us an indication if you have moved. To say initially we projected 1.25 billion, now we are at 2.6 billion. Or we projected 2.6, now we are on 1.525. Because we utilize the figures, we utilize what you present as a tool to do oversight. Now you've got to be able to assist us if you're saying initially this is what we anticipated through the end, we have moved to that, so that we are able to trace those, because otherwise from our side, it sits as inconsistencies, therefore does not give a good picture in terms of how you manage finances as sub.
Thanks, Jefferson. That's noted, and that's also very correct. The whole issue of the timing that I was trying to emphasize, that you give the requirements as it now, but doesn't mean that you still be sitting at that 2 months down the line if nothing happens. Chair, I would also like to bring to your attention that one of the board members joined us while doing session, and maybe would be also good to have him introduce himself together with the acting company secretary.
That's okay.
My name is Kamsan Gidi, one of the board members, and I've been a board member in many institutions previously, and
it's sufficient.
Thank you.
The company said,
my name is Tanji Sejava, and I'm the acting company secretary for the South African Post Office.
Thank you very much. Any follow-up members? Okay, I've got two hands. Honourable Shinan, Honourable McKenzie.
Thank you, Chief. It sounds like my first question answered. Does SAPA have a credit rating? If so, which agency? And what are the costs associated with the rating?
Honourable McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. With all the billion being thrown about, I'm also a little bit uncertain as to where we are. So, there's a 1.6 billion rand guarantee in place. The deputy DG referred to 1.1 billion. Is this in addition to the 1.6 billion, or is that part of the 1.6 billion? That's my first follow-up. Then, secondly, there was another mention by the acting CEO of 3.5 billion rand being a total requirement. Does that now include the 1.6 and the 1.1? And then, Dr. Lushavi, you referred to it as an indebtedness. The chair referred to it as a bailout. The two terms are quite important because if you invest in something, you expect your capital to remain intact and some kind of return to flow from that. And again, I'm not an accountant, so I'm just thinking as a man who pays his pension. But if there's no return on that investment and all that investment or that bailout, all it does is return the organization to a point where it can actually start generating a return, then it is a bailout. So I think we must be very clear on how we phrase those terms. And then lastly, the strategic turnaround plan talked to 102 million rand loss for this financial year, having gone from a 1.2 billion rand loss to 102 million rand loss to a 1.2 billion rand profit next year. Are you on track for this? It doesn't seem that you are. And if you're not, what is your projected loss for this financial year? Thank you, Chair.
And over to Liz.
Chairperson, perhaps this is not really a question. It's just a comment. Chairperson, I think the South African Post Office pretty much finds itself in a similar position as the South African Broadcasting Corporation, with a public mandate as well as a commercial leg. Now, I think going forward, it is just very critical that the universal service obligation and the rollout of that is costed, and that almost separate accounts should be run so that one could understand what is the cost of the USO. Otherwise, if you look at the South African Broadcasting Corporation, they are supposed to make profit on the commercial side to help subsidize the public mandate. And I think to a certain extent, this is also what you are saying. You're saying the unreserved component of your commercial must be sort of exponentially grown so that you can actually afford the universal service obligation. So thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the response.
Thank you. I think the order will allow the chairperson first to clarify the statement, and then we've got one question that is outstanding that I've just picked up from the people found, and we'll address that, and then Nick will give us from the credit rating and the guarantee issues. Then.
Yeah, Chair, let me just clarify. I will talk to the post office has no credit rating. But we are borrowing against government guarantees, so there's a sovereign rating behind our loans. We are borrowing at reasonable cost in our views, driver plus 1.7, at highest, other banks are at 1.5, so we think that's quite good. The issue of investment that I mentioned, we're actually trying to get into new revenue streams, as the CFO was indicating. Yes, we've had declining revenues in terms of the business that we've been carrying on, but we are actually trying to get an increase in revenue, in new revenue streams, in products that we have not provided before. This is work of e-commerce. We have to invest in a check and trace so that we provide a much more reliable feedback to our customers. Of course, that will also return the confidence on our current products. So, in my view, when you're going to take a step change in the business, and we did present to the committee a new business model, it's a new way of doing things. It's not the way that we've done previously. in the post office. Yes, we've got a deficit out of our current model, out of our current business, but we want to also jump into a new way of doing things, and that's where the whole issue is. And we are going to get a far more agile post office, a market-centric post office. We are consolidating on all our sales teams. We're creating a new platform. And that's what is going to enable the post office to compete much more effectively. And therefore, we're not looking at just catching the holes in terms of what we've been doing in the past and then continuing as we have been. So we want to keep what we have had stable and continue with it, as I said, as a launching pad. But we are not just ending there. Therefore, a number of these initiatives that we are asking for money are really new capabilities in terms of the financial launch. I'm also not an expert on marketing and finance, but in my knowledge, when you put money to improve capacity and to do things that you've not been able to do previously, it then is interpreted as an investment. And that's the point that I was making.
You may address that. Thank you once again, Jefferson. Just to clarify the point that was made earlier on by Honorable McKenzie. First of all, the obligations that the South African Post Office has to deal with as far as the license is concerned, they are measured. They might not be measured by ICASA, but we are required to measure them. Whether it is your queue length, whether it is the time mail takes from one spot to another, across regions, across town, across the country, all of these measurements are in place, and they are supplied to ICASA on a very regular basis. And it is on that basis that they make a determination whether, in fact, we are meeting the USO or not. In fact, we have gone even further. ICASA has now even bought its own measuring RFIDs to place at the post office mail centers alongside ours to confirm that information. So the measurement does take place. Insofar as the issue of the municipalities and the other matters that were raised or laid before the Triple C, I think it's very important that we mention that these matters were raised with the ICASA Castle for over 6 or so years that these same matters were raised. So the fact that we are now going to the Triple C is not because we are a commercial bully, if you'd like, that we are trying to intimidate these competitors. We are, in fact, simply just trying to reassert our rights, that there is a legislative imperative, and all we are simply asking for is compliance with that legislative imperative. Honorable Killian, you raised the issue of, is there any research funding around the question of funding of USO? I think a great deal of work went into this question, particularly when we looked at the National ICT Policy Review. So as Acting DG did point out, this will become part of the white paper going forward. And our view really was that, as you quite rightly pointed out, it's important that we have a needs analysis so that we understand where we actually need to roll out these postal outlets. And together with that, we've been undertaking what we are now calling a retail outlet rebalancing. So precisely what you mentioned, that in fact you have too many outlets within a square kilometer of each other. You'd rather close or consolidate and move them elsewhere. And that's exactly what we've been undertaking over the last 6 months. To the question of account separation, indeed, we are required by license and by the law to have an account separation. And we have undertaken that task together with ICASA to establish the criteria and basis of that account separation so that we are clear what is actually the revenue and the cost of the reserve side and what is the revenue and the cost of the unreserved side. The last question I think that was outstanding was from the chairperson regarding the National Bargaining Chamber. Chair, perhaps it's a naming issue. The National Bargaining Chamber has been operational. I'm actually chairperson of that National Bargaining Chamber. But as you'll be aware, it's primarily in place to deal with questions of bargaining in that sense and the terms and conditions of employment. So the last meetings that were held were prior to the strike of 2014. When we were trying to bargain around questions of salary increases, etc. At a later point, it evolved itself into what was infamously then known as the Leadership Forum, and we continued with that. However, we have since signed an agreement with the unions around something called the Consultative Forums, National Consultative Forums, which the unions have signed on to. In build-up to that, we've worked together with the CCMA, and we've had numerous engagements with the unions in build-up to that. I think 6 or 7 meetings have been held.
to clarify the terms of reference, to clarify how we will continue to engage, and it is envisaged that as we start now, as CEO has mentioned, we've already had one meeting yesterday, we are going to have another meeting tomorrow and Thursday. So we envisage that we will continue these engagements until they become part and parcel of the normal engagement process within the South African Post Office. Thank you.
Just to explain on the union issues, because there's a question on the the yearly or two-yearly agreement. I think the agreement that the CEO and Andrew now was referring to is the framework, the structure of the contralative forums. The yearly, two-yearly agreements would actually cover issues of salaries and bargaining. We've not been able to do that, and we have indicated to the unions that it would be untimely because of the situation in the organization to engage on salary negotiations, because we really don't have money and we can't go engage and agree on spending money that is there. We need to fix the business and focus on that before we look at the rest. And therefore, the agreement is really a once-off to set up the structures and then, as indicated, ensure that they are better pressed and they work. Because if we don't have those contractual structures, everything then collapses, as we've seen in the past. So it will create that foundation. And on that foundation, then in the future, we'll negotiate and bargain through the National Bargaining Forum, which has always been the index.
Honourable McKenzie, to answer your question, in terms of the 1.6 billion guarantee that was put in place for going concern reasons last year, the 1.25 billion borrowing facility is linked to that guarantee. It's not in addition to that. And then for the investment numbers that we're talking now, there will definitely be a significant return on those investments in terms of our forecasts, which have been quite conservative in terms of the benefit side. So it does make business sense to invest that amount of money in the post office, because the return would be at least twice that. Okay. In terms of the final question, in terms of the SCP showing a 102 million loss for the current financial year, obviously, the given our cash situation, the delays are actually putting that at risk. So in terms of providing exact forecasts, I could do that right now. I'd rather know, if and when the funding comes, and then I can give you a reliable forecast.
Thank you very much. I think that helps in terms of the discussion. We'll continue having the discussion. I think mainly for us is constant monitoring of the implementation of STP. But as we're following from the roadmap, colleagues, because the roadmap primarily identifies the steps, the stop the bleeding, which is very critical, because the two following steps without stopping the bleeding is not going to be able to, when you refer to, because it's within this year that we expect that now the financial situation and all that would have been stabilized based on a plan. And that for the second year, because it's within your third quarter that you needed to start with your business model, and the fourth quarter where you need to start talking about sustainability of the business. That's based on the general strategy. So for us, it's really important that as we evaluate, we're basing on what has been presented and what every time you appear for us, we interact with. And I think we should be able to say there's still room for a lot of things to be get, as the acting CEO saying that we'll clarify some of the issues. But I think from where we come from, members, there's quite now starting to see a light at the end of the tunnel. I'm just appealing to the board to really, really exercise the judicial responsibilities. It is when boards ignore their work, or when boards focus from their actual mandate, that we end up in situations like this. And so our appeal is to the board today to say, can you assist us in exercising the oversight over the executive, by ensuring that there's capacity within the institution to be able to implement the program and save post office? Because several times I've been asked, even in the media, to say maybe we should close shop. And my aunt has been saying that, you know, because I don't think that the people in the remote areas will receive the services that they need, because no business person is going to go where they will not make business, where they will not make profit. There's a specific reason why post office was set up, and the infrastructure that is currently available that none has in the country gives you an added advantage to be able to do and deliver the service as post office. Now, if we can just focus and do what we are expected to do, I think we should be able to get post office to where it's supposed to be. The company that will be able to say you deliver whatever it takes. Whether we wake up with the threat of strike, we wake up with the threat of financials, but a customer should feel comfortable that if I have posted a letter, I would receive a letter. If I posted something or somebody sends me a gift abroad, I would receive it in time. So that service is very important. And it's important for us to really go back and give that service. So there is an opportunity, there is hope for post office. We're just appealing for everybody to do their best. And we know too much what the acting group CEO has been saying about the staff members. The morale is going to be low. The sooner we sort out the situation and be able to find a way of motivating people to remain, especially the good skills, that we don't lose the skills within post office, that we end up with people that we'd rather get rid of and we've lost the skills that we needed. Because compensation is important, competitiveness, competing with other people within the sector, within the industry. So we've got to try and make sure that we create an organization that employees might should feel that this is an employee, become an employer of choice. Not because people have no alternative, not because people are forced to remain, abet to remain, but people remain in post office because they want to. And now sharing with Dr. Deshava that very funny, because we as MPs, our contacts are on website. So your employees talk to us. I receive emails daily from your employees in terms of that. You've got to go back and rebuild confidence that your employees should be able to talk to you. Because that's one of the challenges that you've got. You have to rebrand the leadership of the institution to such an extent that they feel when they raise issues with you, now that the board is here, they must feel comfortable that they can raise matters with the board and the board will listen to them. They can raise matters with the executive and the executive will listen to them. That's going to be important going forward. So in those few ways, we thank you very much for being here and having this interaction. We'll see the delegation when we deal with our, what you call, BRRR annual reports in October. Thank you very much. Members, let's take 2 minutes break so that they can speak as we deal with our preparations for next week.